to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
What is the difference between having empathy and being an empath? Today we'll be exploring the blessings and challenges of being an empath. Sensitive people have much to be grateful for. They are able to experience exquisite passion and joy. They can perceive the big picture on a deep level. They're attuned to the beauty, poetry, and energy of life, and their compassion gives them the capacity to help others. Their sensitivities allow them to be caring, vulnerable, and aware beings. They also need to take special care to protect themselves from overload or absorbing too much negativity and stress from others. They need to protect themselves from adrenal fatigue and energy vampires. Today, we'll be exploring the gifts of being an empath, as well as the strategies for protection and well-being with our guest, Dr. Judith Orloff. Dr. Judith Orloff is a psychiatrist in private practice in Los Angeles and is on the psychiatric clinical faculty at UCLA. She specializes in treating highly sensitive people and empaths. Dr. Orloff, an empath herself, synthesizes the pearls of conventional medical wisdom with cutting-edge knowledge of intuition, spirituality, and energy medicine. She's the author of Emotional Freedom, Liberate Yourself from Negative Emotions and Transform Your Life. Second Sight, an intuitive psychiatrist, tells her extraordinary story and shows you how to tap your own inner wisdom. And The Empath's Survival Guide, Life Strategies for Sensitive People. Join us for the next hour as we explore the resources available for sensitive souls with our guest, Dr. Judith Orloff. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Judith, welcome.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here with you, Justine.
It's so good to have you sitting here once more. I always love being with you. And I would like to begin just asking you the very simple question, or maybe not so simple. What is an empath?
An empath is somebody who's very high up on the empathy spectrum. And it's somebody who's empathic and caring and loving and sensitive and intuitive. But as an empath myself and treating many empaths, I know that we tend to absorb the energy, the emotions, and physical symptoms of others into our own bodies because we're so porous. Empaths don't have the same neurological wiring that other people do. And so we tend to absorb things and take on the world's angst. So my goal in writing this book is to give people strategies on how to keep your empathy open and alive and growing while still protecting yourself and learning how to set very clear boundaries with others who might snatch it out of it, who might snatch it from you.
So tell me, Judith, can we train ourselves to be an empath, or is it something that we're born with? It's innate.
Well, some empaths are born that way. Some babies come out empathic compared to other babies. But empathy can be trained. And people who are on the spiritual path and on the intuitive path, what they say to me is that their empathy and that their ability to tune in intuitively keeps growing as they mature on their spiritual path.
So is there a difference between highly sensitive people, or HSP as it's called, and those who are empaths? Is there a difference between those two groups?
There's some commonalities and some differences. Empaths are the highest up on the empathic spectrum. They're the most sensitive, and they tend to have very strong intuitive experiences. They're dream empaths, they're animal empaths, they're plant empaths, they're telepathic empaths. And really, these empaths can communicate with other realms sometimes. But HSPs are more associated with all the sensory phenomena, such as sensitivity to light, sound, excessive talking. They require a lot of alone time to refuel versus people time. They don't like going out into crowds as much and prefer one-to-one interactions. Those are things that empaths and HSPs have in common.
I see. So they do have a commonality, but yeah, there's also something else. There's some piece that empaths have access to beyond just being a sensitive person.
Yes, their sensory system is more sensitive than, let's say, an HSP's on the intuitive level, because it can stretch into different realms and it can sense and know things from people telepathically, precognitively, with animals. Many empaths are animal empaths, as I write about, where you can actually have communications with animals and know their needs and be able to shepherd them and care for them. I just was having a session with an empath patient who is a dairy farmer, and she has 400 cows in her herd. And the positive is she loves all of them so much. And the negative is she feels when each one of them gets ill and she has to take care of them. So her task is to learn how to center and protect her energy and not go down every time one of her cows gets sick.
Wow. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
It's very practical implications.
Very much. So going back into your own personal experience, you had these skills. You came in as an empath, I'm assuming.
Yes.
Yes. And so as a child, I know that you've written about this, that your parents really wanted you to be happy and safe, and you were very sensitive, and they would say, well, develop a thick skin, or
right,
they would give you
right
advice. That what was that like?
Oh, it felt terrible. I felt so unseen. I was an only child. I felt alone. I felt lonely. I was having these strong, intuitive, empathic experiences that I couldn't explain. So I was blaming myself for them. And finally, my parents just said, never mention another one of your experiences again at home. So I grew up having to be silent, having to squash these incredible sensations and sense of empathy and being able to read people and not be able to develop it and hold it in. And so I got very heavily involved with drugs at that point in time, which I'm not recommending for anyone, to try and squash my empathic feelings because they were way too much for me. And I had no guidance to help me at the time.
So I remember one thing that you have written about is that early on, you had a precognitive dream about your grandfather. And what was that?
Right. This is a mediumship empath, where I had a dream that my grandfather came to me to say goodbye and tell me that he loved me. And the next morning, we got a call that he suddenly died without any warning. And so what empaths can do sometimes is they have a sensitivity to reach beyond the veil and sense what's going on the other side. And children often have this. As a psychiatrist, children come in to see me to deal with this. Parents bring their children in and say, what do we do with this? And it's a very natural skill for an empath, and so it has to be dealt with in a very sensitive way. But as a child, I had that. I had no support. That's why I feel so strongly at this point about offering a network of support for empaths so we don't have to do it alone. It's not something you can really do alone. You really need to have the guidance of those that have come before you, who have learned the strategies that could help you.
Exactly. And I think that when you had that dream, you woke up and told your parents.
Right.
And they said, oh, no, it's just a nightmare.
Right.
They denied it. They poo-pooed it.
They did poo-poo
until,
it.
Until the next morning.
Right.
And it happened. And then what was their response at that point?
Oh, just horrible looks. I remember their eyes and just, you know, such, you know, befuddlement.
And you felt like you caused his death then because you didn't have any support system.
Yeah, I had no idea what happened, but where I went and myself was, oh my God, am I the bad seed? Am I like Carrie on TV, which was a popular TV show back then, you know, about an evil girl who has all these psychic abilities. Am I like Carrie? What's going on? And I had nobody to talk to. I can't tell you what a powerful influence that has had on my healing path. Terms of now being able to reach out to people and also having a strong passion to offer empaths a network to interact with one another.
And when you you were coming off of using drugs and addiction and that sort of way of just numbing yourself, you found a really good friend. It was fortunate that the psychiatrist that
right.
your parents sent you to when they were worried about you, that he, I think it was a male, understood what was going on with you.
This man was my angel. He was able to look at me and say, you're having these intuitive, empathic experiences. You have to come to grips with them. We have to talk about them. We have to deal with all your fears for you to become whole. And running from these is one part of your addictive tendency. So we have to really deal with it. But I want to say that in the book, I talk about empaths and addiction. And many empaths are prone to addiction, food addiction, substance abuse, because the world is too much for them, and when they haven't learned to modulate their sensitivities, they want to numb them and often turn to food and alcohol.
I know that you mentioned that empaths and highly sensitive people, they need a lot of alone time.
Well, yes.
Coming up in our society, let's say as a high school student or something, then it must just be impossible for them. They want to be part of the group, and yet they have other needs.
They have other needs. They empaths have special needs, and so it's important to have education for empathic teenagers, empathic children. There's a chapter in the book on empathic parenting. How do you have children, or should you have children if you're an empath? I mean, there's enough stress for people who aren't empaths. How do wide open empaths with no insulation on their neurological system deal with children? It's totally possible, but you have to learn the skills that we'll talk about in I Present.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. This is, and educators to have educators who understand that the different needs, that nobody fits like this one mold. And if these kids come in, that you have to be sensitive. As an educator, it would be ideal to be sensitive to their needs.
When a parent brings a child in my office for a psychiatric consult, and the child is saying, I'm feeling so overwhelmed, I can't center myself, I just feel so anxious, what makes you feel better? When I'm alone and when I'm with my imaginary friend. And, you know, of course I would say, yes, really, yeah. Tell me about that. Instead of what? Imaginary friend, and prescribe some kind of antipsychotic for an imaginary friend.
Exactly. We'll talk about that in just one moment. I want to remind our listeners, I'm here with Dr. Judith Orloff. She's a psychiatrist, and she's the author of The Empath Survival Guide, Life Strategies for Sensitive People. And if you want to know more about her work, she has a free empath support newsletter, and you can find it on her website, drjudithorloff.com. And she spells it Dr. D-R Judith Orloff, O-R-L-O-F-F.com, drjudithorloff.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Dr. Judith Orloff. She's a psychiatrist and the author of The Empath Survival Guide, Life Strategies for Sensitive People. And Judith, you just said, like, when, let's say, a child comes in or even an adult comes in and they're having symptoms, your training, let's say, as a doctor, is okay to give them medication, to give them, you know, I don't know what, Valium, or I don't know what the pills are these days, but to just sort of medicate them. But you maybe would use that, but you also do something else.
Yes, when empaths come to see me in my private practice, I evaluate them in totally differently. First, you have to diagnose whether someone is an empath, and they take a quiz. Now, do you rejuvenate yourself alone? One of the questions. Are you sensitive to noise, smells, and excessive talking? Do you prefer your alone time to being with lots of people? And have you been labeled as, quote, overly sensitive all of your life? Now, do you prefer to take your own car places so that you can leave social situations when you please so you're not trapped? Do you prefer sometimes sleeping alone? You know, all these questions are really important for empaths to answer. And do I get drained by narcissists and other energy vampires? No, and do I have anxiety attacks when I get around too many people? So these are all signs that someone is an empath. So diagnostically, as a psychiatrist, I go, okay, you're an empath. So we can deal with it from this perspective. But from my training, I was trained at UCLA at the Neuropsychiatric Institute. I was trained in biological psychiatry, which meant I gave out medications to people who had extreme anxiety attacks. I never took a history on, are you an empath? And if so, the treatment is so entirely different, you see? And so that's what I'm trying to do, is to offer people who are empathic the real answers to what you're dealing with here. Because if an empath says, I need to be alone, you know, half the time, I'm not going to say, no, you need socialization, you need to go out there and be with people, force yourself. I'm going to say, learn to meditate. Now, use that alone time to connect to nature or be with your animals. Connect to your heart so you can center yourself when you have these anxiety attacks. You see, so I use an empath's strengths and gifts. Empaths have a very strong inner world. And so if you trust that, or if I trust that as a therapist, I can help my patients develop their inner worlds instead of saying, no, you need to be more outer oriented. I mean, one time I had an empath patient and she just wasn't prepared to interact with other humans. She had 15 dogs and she lived in this environment with her dogs. Yes, some psychiatrists would say, you know, get her out there. You know, it's not healthy, but she wouldn't do it. So I worked with her and with her dogs and her sense. The dogs would die. She would grieve. She would have intimacy issues. In any case, it was just one way I worked with someone within the context of their own reality so that she could grow more centered and secure and safe within herself. You see, it's a very different perspective than you need to fit into this box. You need to go to parties. You need to socialize. You need to X, Y, and Z, you know, or drive on the freeways. That's another thing with empaths. I haven't driven on the freeways for years. I cannot tolerate it. It is so overwhelming for me in Los Angeles to be with cars whizzing by with a million lanes. I feel like I'm going to leave my body. I just can't do it. So I accepted that years ago, and I take side streets.
So, and in the woman with the dogs, so when you worked with her within what she could tolerate, then she became a better adjusted person in the world, or what? What was the ultimate, or not ultimate, but where did that go?
She grew emotionally. She grew and she became more integrated emotionally and was more able to feel whole when she went out in the world. But she had to go through these growth and learning experiences with those she loved, the beings that she loved, in order for her to grow. And traditional psychiatry would say, that's crazy. She needs to get out with people.
Right.
But it really wasn't going to work with her. She would have left therapy if I had done that.
Yeah.
So I work with where they are. That was an extreme case. But empaths are often agoraphobic, and they could become recluses as well because the world just gets too stimulating for them. And they haven't learned how to learn breathing techniques or shielding techniques or honoring your alone time or being able to go in the bathroom when you're feeling overwhelmed at work. There's a chapter on empaths at work. What do you do when you're overwhelmed at work? I mean, the bathroom is an amazing place to go. I've used it for years to get out, or I'm at a party and I'm feeling overstimulated.
Yeah.
So the key, though, is compassion. You know, I'm an empath and I wouldn't give it up for the world. And it helps me as a psychiatrist with my patients to have more compassion, to see more deeply into people. I love to go deep. It's my pleasure to go deep in this lifetime. And that's how I want to be. And so it helps me in so many ways, but I've had to learn how to take care of myself, time management. Meditation is my primary spiritual practice. So I meditate a lot. I gravitate towards my altar a lot, which living with someone now, I'm living with my partner, and it's a little hard for him because I'm so gravitating towards my altar all the time and closing the door. So it takes a lot of creative conversation when I'm an empath in a relationship and I have all these inner practices which take up a lot of time.
I'd like to talk about that in a minute, but before I do, I want to ask you about the particular challenges of an empath. And you mentioned one of them, like the addiction.
Yes.
Is one, and then I also want to talk about the energy vampires and how to protect ourselves from that. So those two.
Right, yes. Empaths and highly sensitive people are prone to addiction because the high sensory input of the world overwhelms them, and they go on sensory overload. And when an empath goes on sensory overload, it's all over because they can't function. They can't process correctly. And sometimes when I go on sensory overload to that degree, I just need to get into a room, close the door, pull down the shades, keep people out, and just get very quiet and go into the hibernating state to recalibrate myself internally so that everything can quiet down. And so what happens is when empaths don't know how to do that by themselves, they might turn to pills, drugs, alcohol, overeating. The turn of the century faith healers were typically extremely obese women because they felt that in order to work with patients with a lot of pain, they needed a lot of fat to buffer it. And it is true that fat buffers pain, you see, but that's not the only coping mechanism, and it's not healthy for them to be chronically obese. And so there are other options that I discuss other than overeating to be able to stay centered, clear, and not take on whatever pain your patients are experiencing.
So let's talk about a couple of those. At least give us a little thumbnail of some of the strategies that we might do to cope rather than go into an addiction.
Well, number one, you have to realize that you are an empathic eater. Let's say we're talking about food, that you eat empathically because you get overwhelmed by stress and negativity. And it's more than emotional eating, it's energetic eating, mm-hmm. where you energetically feel overwhelmed and you rush to the refrigerator and your only solace will be filling up with food.
And this is one of the reasons why dieting alone won't work.
No,
because you're not dealing with the systemic need.
Right. It's an energetic phenomena, basically, on the very bottom line level. Overeating is an energetic phenomena for empaths. Mm-hmm. Not for non-empaths, but for empaths.
Right.
And so it's important when I work with my empath patients who are overeating to really slow down the dynamic. What happens when I'm around a narcissist who's an energy vampire and this person is charming me and reeling me in and then cuts me off and is cold, withholding, and punishing when I express my needs, then why do I rush to the refrigerator?
So now the narcissist, at first they're charming and you're attracted.
Yeah.
And then they
big time.
Kind of turn that off after a while, and suddenly they become this other person. So
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But that's a particular type of energy vampire that empaths are very attracted to. Unfortunately, I work with so many empaths who are in toxic relationships with narcissists and can't get out. You know, it takes them 25 years, I work with people, or to actually get out, to have the courage to get out. But narcissists are attracted to empaths because of their giving, loving hearts and their sensitivity. And empaths are attracted to narcissists because they seem so understanding and seem so present. And they get reeled in by the promise of the facade. And then when they see the real person, they're so in love with them, they can't leave.
And so now you're connecting that with a certain addiction of food, overeating.
Yes, exactly. That's just one stimulus.
Yes.
Where you go right to the refrigerator because you're so overwhelmed with emotion from an energy vampire that you go right to the refrigerator. So what I would suggest is having a meditation pillow right in front of the refrigerator.
I love that.
Yeah. It's a visual cue. It stops you. It confuses your addictive line of thought that just wants to go for that refrigerator and stuff food in your mouth. So you could sit there, meditate, center yourself, connect to spirit, because part of recovering from any addiction is connecting to spirit and a force larger than yourself that could help you beyond the obsessive addictive thinking. And I don't know if you know this, Justine, but I've been in 12-step programs for 28 years. So I've worked a lot with, you know, why I was drawn to drugs and alcohol as an empath, and working with my spiritual path to fulfill and sustain me.
I know that you have many meditations in your book,
yeah.
and one of them, and you mentioned it just briefly, was the heart meditation. And it's just very, like, as you say, even if you're in a work situation that you can't get away from all
right.
the chaos, you can go to the restroom and you can do this heart meditation. Can you describe that meditation for us?
Yes, the heart meditation is one of my basic spiritual practices, and I teach it to all my empath patients, all my patients. And what it is that when you're feeling stressed out, or when you're in an environment where you just feel like you can't handle it, you just take a mini break, 3 minutes in a bathroom, on a park bench, and a piece of grass, anything. You close your eyes, you begin to breathe, and connecting to yourself is so key to come back to yourself. And you connect to your heart, which is the center for loving kindness. And you can picture the heart chakra in the middle of the chest. And you can even have an image of some heart-centered activity, or the ocean, or a flower, or the forest, and focus on that and the energy of the heart, which is a warmth in the middle of the chest. And you can put your hand over your heart in the middle of your chest while you're focusing on this image. And you breathe to exhale the overwhelm and to inhale the heart healing energy. So it's a way of recalibrating your system by consciously, intentionally igniting the heart energy, which is the source of all healing. And so what this does is calms you down very quickly. And you need to learn how to do that. It's quite an important skill, you know, in life, and empaths especially. And when empaths who have anxiety disorders come into my office, I lay them down on the couch and I put my hand over their heart chakra so they can experience what that is. And then they can learn how to do it for themselves.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much. I'm here with Dr. Judith Orloff. She's a psychiatrist and the author of The Empath Survival Guide, Life Strategies for Sensitive People. My name is Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org.
I'm here with Dr. Judith Orloff, and she's the author of The Empath Survival Guide, Life Strategies for Sensitive People. Judith, one suggestion that you had in your book that I thought was very, very helpful, and you suggest that we take